Hey everybody, this is Angie for Robotin LaRossi, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of our podcast where I'm joined by fellow certified financial planner pros from around the country who emphasize college financial planning in their firms. We've decided to name our podcast Ask the Experts About Paying for College, which is the same name as our Facebook group. We invite you to join our group and be a part of the conversation so that we can stop the student loan crisis one family at a time and help families make smarter college buying decisions. I'm joined today by Quinn Arnold of Arnold Financial Planning and Nanette Kamian of Inspiration Financial Planning. And I'm Angie of Avea Financial Planning. And I'd like to welcome you guys. Thanks for joining in.
Thanks, Angie. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Angie.
So our topic is a really important one, student loans. Many families wonder how they are going to pay for school, and naturally borrowing comes up. So that's our topic today. I'm going to let each of you introduce yourself. Quinn, would you mind starting?
Yeah, thanks, Angie, and hi, Nanette. I think three of us have known each other for a little while. My name is Quinn Arnold with Arnold Financial Planning. We help families who are looking to secure their retirements while also getting their kids through college. And I feel fairly passionate about this topic because I myself took out too many loans when I was an undergrad and really should have known some of these strategies to not only save on the cost of college, but also have just a more successful post-college transition because of it. So I feel like there's an area there where we can help a lot of families that don't have access or experience to the college planning game and try to help them with better outcomes for their finances.
Terrific. Thank you. And Nanette.
Thanks, Angie. I'm really happy to be here. I'm Nanette Kamian of Inspiration Financial Planning. I started my firm about 3 years ago and immediately realized that I had a passion for helping parents who are getting ready to send their kids to college. Like Quinn, I also took out a significant amount of student loans over my lifetime. And, you know, parents don't really understand the process about paying for college these days. It's changed a lot since we were younger and since I went to school. And a lot of parents are shocked when they start researching colleges and understanding how much it costs, and they might not have been able to save over their child's lifetime in order to prepare to pay for it. So I really love to help families make that transition into, you know, whether they've been saving or they haven't been saving, into thinking about how they're going to pay for college and doing that in a way that doesn't impact their financial future negatively going forward.
Right. Excellent. Okay. And I wanted to preface our conversation today with just a couple of comments about paying for college that maybe you've already heard about. Statistics such as the student loan debt limit or debt maximum is up to $1.5 trillion right now, which is actually higher than auto or credit card debt. The average student graduates with around $37,000 in debt. And defaults on student debt is at 14% and increasing yearly. So many feel that the student loan situation is at crisis levels and that something needs to be done. The members of this group have a lot of training and experience to help families develop a four-year funding plan and basically college funding budget, which might include loans. But with that budget is how we tend to help and advise families to go shop for an affordable college education. And one of the goals of this podcast is to educate consumers so that they don't get in over their head with student loan debt. One way to do this is to map out the full 4 years. How are you going to pay? And then doing that for all kids, taking advantage of everything from savings, cash flow, tax credits, summer job income, grandparent help, and tax strategies. We like to say that we can help you figure out how to pay for all 4 years. And so I wanted to start this off by kind of, you know, the beginning of financial aid starts with the FAFSA. And would you guys talk a little bit about the FAFSA? What is it? Why should people know about it and learn about it? And it opens October 1st. Why should they complete it as soon as they can? What do you have to say?
Yeah, sure, Angie, I'll go ahead and start. So the FAFSA is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. and it is free to fill it out. You can go on to fafsa.ed.gov, and like Angie mentioned, it opens October 1st. A lot of parents shy away from filling out the FAFSA because they think it's too complicated. They think it's intrusive. It asks a lot of questions about your tax situation, about your income, your assets for both the parent and the student. But it really is the first step in the financial aid process. And if you don't, or if you're not 100% certain how you're going to pay for school for all 4 years, I recommend that everybody fill out the FAFSA. And it's, for most schools, the only way to access school financial aid also. So in addition to receiving federal financial aid, you could potentially receive financial aid from the school. But it is the only way to access the direct student loan program that is supported by the federal government. So I do recommend that every family fill it out regardless of their financial situation, or, you know, whether they think that they'll be eligible for financial aid.
Yeah, I've also agreed that that's a really important tip, is that even if you think you're not going to qualify, to still complete that. Very important.
I will say one other thing too, Angie, is that a lot of times it's nice to have it filled out if there is a change in circumstances within your family, either during the school admission process or after the student has already started school, because it makes it much easier if there is a change in circumstances to update your financial aid profile with the school and potentially receive more aid.
Exactly, because things do come up in the year. You know, there can be a death in the family or a divorce, and that would could affect eligibility for financial aid.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure you get that done and fill that out. So what is important for people to know about the FAFSA and when they're completing it? Because I've been on some Facebook forums where people say, oh, the FAFSA is so easy and it took me only 15 minutes to do, which, yeah, in theory, it is quick and easy if you just kind of go through it. But to do it really smart and to take advantage of planning to complete the FAFSA, what should people keep in mind?
If it's okay, I'll jump in. I think one thing is, be honest. This is a document that the schools and the government can come back and audit. And so although it's maybe not as serious as your federal income taxes each year, there could be some pretty painful financial repercussions if you misstate things or just ignore certain aspects. And so a few of those items, you're going to need information about your income. The FAFSA system now does link up directly to the IRS to pull information if you allow it to. So it will pull the relevant tax information and income information in. But you also need to input things like your current assets. And for that, you're going to want to follow the directions carefully as to what it is that you're expected to report. There is some supporting documentation online and then also with the paper version of it that can explain more about the types of balances and what exactly you should put in. But take that seriously. You know, I've had people say, one of the things that they'll ask about is how much you have for in your bank accounts, like your checking and savings accounts. And I actually had a family look at me and just kind of say, like, can we just put in like a couple thousand, you know, just as if like, oh, can we just put anything in here? And the correct answer is no, like, don't just put anything in there. The thing you want to put in there is the accurate amount. You should probably go out to your bank's website, pull down the values for that day. It's the values for your accounts as of the day that you're filling out the FAFSA. So, you know, you can get into playing games around how you want to get that balance, but be accurate and truthful about what you're putting on the FAFSA and follow the directions. So that's like my top piece of advice is do take it seriously. You probably could fill it out in 15 minutes if you know what you're doing and you have a simple situation. Some people don't, though, so it can take you quite a bit longer if you're dealing with something like divorce or if your children have assets that are significant and things like that.
Okay. And then one tip I would add too is retirement accounts like IRAs and 401ks. That's where a lot of people are socking away their money. They actually are not counted on the FAFSA. So that's something to keep in mind when you're adding in those different accounts, is to not count the retirement accounts. Don't confuse that with just banking accounts.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So when we talk about loans, we have our federal student loan program, and then there's also private loans. I know people oftentimes wonder where or why they might take loans from the federal government versus private loans. You know, how do they make decisions on what direction they should go? What advice do you have for them?
Well, I typically recommend that every family start by looking at the direct federal student loan program. And that's for a couple of reasons. That's what you automatically can qualify for through filling out the FAFSA. You don't have to fill out a separate application. It is the student that is actually applying to borrow the money, and they are approved even without a credit history with no cosigner. So they are borrowing that money. They are limited on the amount that they can borrow each year, $5,500 for freshmen, and then all the way differing amounts up till senior year. And there is a cap on the amount that they're able to borrow in total. In addition to that, the federal student loans have various repayment programs. They have various options for deferment or forbearance. There's a lot of flexibility in how you end up paying off those loans, and the interest rates are fixed each year. So the federal student loan program has a great set of benefits that you can't access as a student with no credit history anywhere else.
Versus for example, if you were trying to get private loans, those features are not necessarily available with private loans.
Correct.
What would be?
Yeah, and it's important to say too that so everything Nanette said is absolutely correct. And then also though, keep in mind that there are a lot of different types of loans within the federal program. So there are Perkins loans for lower income or households. Not a lot of people qualify for those, but those are great loans. Then there are the big bulk or the big monsters of this are the what we used to call the Stafford program. Now they just call them federal direct loans. There's subsidized and unsubsidized flavors of those that just goes to who's paying for the interest while you're in deferment, while in school. That's a subsidized loan if you're not paying for it. If you are paying for it, or if it's just accruing on your account, that's an unsubsidized loan. Then there are also PLUS loans that technically fall into this whole category too. The PLUS program is for parents to borrow money for their student. And the thing about PLUS loans that I just feel compelled to say is they're generally not as good a deal as the regular Stafford loans that the student takes out. The interest rates often are higher. It is set higher, and the origination fees are much higher for PLUS loans. So parents, that's something where you do need to start thinking, do I want a private loan that might have better terms than a PLUS loan? But Nanette is absolutely right that for the most part, the Stafford or the subsidized, unsubsidized direct loans are a better deal than private all around. But I think once you get into the PLUS, into like filling out the extra amount that the parent might be borrowing, that's where it really pays to put in some effort and think through the process.
Okay. And you mentioned something there I want to follow up on. You talked about an origination fee. And this was a detail that I hadn't fully understood until I kind of did a little deeper study. The origination fee is taken off the top of the loan. So can you talk about that a little bit, Quinn?
Yeah, yep. So you're going to owe a fee just for borrowing in addition to the interest rate that's calculated for the formerly called Stafford loans. I think it's right around 1%, if I'm remembering that correctly. And then you might know exactly. And then for PLUS loans, it's something like 3.5% or 4%.
It's over 4% now.
Is it over 4%? Okay, yeah. So these are for the, kind of to pay for some of the fees in the program or the cost of the whole program. And that does get taken off the loan. So you're not actually disbursed the entire amount that you are applying for, if I'm saying that correctly. I think that's what you're getting at.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So if you need $10,000 to pay for something, you don't end up with $10,000 because it's $10,000 minus that origination fee. Yeah. You know, might be a few hundred dollars off. And that's something I think, I don't know if people realize. I know I didn't at first too. So, okay. And then with the federal student loans, there is this use it or lose it component. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So each year, like I mentioned, that there's a maximum that you can borrow as an undergraduate student. For dependent undergraduates, it's $5,500 your freshman year. If for some reason you think that you don't need to borrow that much your freshman year, say you've got a 529 account, or you're receiving help from somewhere else, or you get a bigger scholarship that year, your sophomore year, you can't then borrow the sophomore year $6,500 and the freshman year $5,500. That $5,500 is now gone, and you can only still borrow the maximum for the sophomore year of $6,500.
Okay. And so in my mind, that's where having a four-year funding plan already mapped out is beneficial, because I have come across situations where people did not borrow in that first or second year, and they used up maybe their 529 savings or other savings that were available to them. And then all of a sudden in year three or four, they no longer had money to pay for school, and the federal loan amount was not enough. So they ended up having to go out and borrow private money on top of the federal money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in an effort to avoid doing that and having a bigger vision of your overall four-year plan is to kind of map out what each year looks like and then possibly take advantage of those student loans those first 2 years.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wonder, is there more that we can talk about on the Parent Plus loan? We touched on it a little bit. Would you have any more that you think you would want to share on that topic?
Yeah, Sorry.
Go ahead.
The PLUS loan program has really changed over time. I think it might have been 10 or 15 years ago now that the government changed the PLUS loan program and allowed parents to borrow significantly more money through this program. Parents today are eligible to borrow up to the amount of the total cost of attendance for their child's school minus any financial aid they receive. And for most people, the requirements for borrowing that money are very, very low. You just need to have no bankruptcy history, within the last several years. But, for the majority of parents, they are approved for the Direct Plus loans. They don't take into account your ability to actually pay back that loan. And that's where a lot of people get into trouble, is they're not thinking about what it's going to look like to actually pay that money back. It's very easy to get approved for. And before you know it, if you start borrowing for your child's first year of school, before you know it, you've borrowed a significant amount of money total over that four-year college or 5 or 6 year college experience for your child. And most parents don't think about what that payment's going to look like when their child is done.
And then Nanette, I'm sure I know the answer to this, but then when you have child number two and child number three come along, I would imagine the government must stop you from borrowing for those other children, right?
No.
No, they just keep on borrowing, yeah. Don't they?
Yeah. And keep in mind that unlike most forms of consumer debt, this is not something that's dischargeable in bankruptcy. There's a lot of the Parent PLUS loan balances are climbing at an even faster rate than student loan balances right now because of the easy ability to borrow this money. And they will garnish Social Security checks. They will, take money from anywhere they can get it if you are, not able to make those payments.
And something for listeners to be aware of too is sometimes on the financial aid award letters, they may indicate that all need has been met and that there's zero left for the family to meet, but they're not clearly articulating that the need was met with a Parent PLUS loan.
Right. And I feel like that's totally egregious.
Yeah, it's not very transparent. And in fact, I recently read something, and I'm not sure where I came across it at, but it indicated that the family who received that type of a letter felt like they had gotten a full scholarship because they felt like they didn't have anything else to pay. And that's just not the case when you're making up the gap with a Parent PLUS loan. Okay.
Yeah, and there's Angie. It's a good point, because at one point I had tried to help a parent out with multiple offers that they received. So they had different financial aid award letters. So you get, you know, after you get accepted to a school, then if you go far enough along in that process, they'll give you a financial aid award letter. And unfortunately, there's no standard form. It's not like that every college in the U.S. has gotten together and agreed that this is what the aid award letter will look like. There are similar components, but things can be laid out in a different way. And so it's really on you as the family, or hint, hint, working with an advisor, to look through your different aid award letters and do an apples-to-apples comparison, because there are a few things that will be clearly spelled out, like scholarships or grants, and they'll have loans written out, but you have to understand how that comes together to pay for those, that year of college. And that's just the first year that you're looking at. So it is unfortunately kind of challenging.
Exactly. Consumers really do need to be aware. And oftentimes that is where an advisor can help them make heads or tails of what they're looking at, and the planning process as well. Nanette, you had mentioned something too about the responsibility, who is responsible for paying off the federal direct loan or the Parent PLUS loan. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So the direct federal loans, the unsubsidized and the subsidized version, are loans that are taken out in the student's name. The student signs the promissory note. They are responsible for the repayment alone. There's no cosigner required. The PLUS loan is taken out in the parent's name. The parent, you know, is solely responsible for that debt. It shows up on their credit report, and they are the ones who are responsible for paying it off in the future.
If the parent takes out a parent loan, can they pass that over to the kid to pay, or how does that work?
No, unfortunately not for the parents' sake. That's their debt. And the really big downside of this is that, you know, usually we talk about smart borrowing and smart debt. There's no benefit that the parent is receiving by taking out this debt. They have in the future no increase in income to help them pay it off. It's their debt. A lot of parents think that, oh, when my child graduates from college, I'm going to have them start making the payments. And that's great. If you agree with your student and they get a great job and they can afford to do that, and they do actually do it, that's a great situation for you. But at the end of the day, the loan is still in your name. It can't be transferred to the student, you know, for them to pay it off later on, unless you do go end up refinancing into a private student loan that, you know, down the road. But as long as you're keeping that original federal PLUS loan, it is in your name only.
We like to talk about a rule of thumb to help people look forward into the future with regard to what their payments might end up being after they're all done with school. Can you speak about that a little bit, one of you?
Yeah, I typically say that it's, you know, with interest rates going up, this is actually a little bit higher than it used to be. But I typically say, you know, if you borrow $30,000, your payment's going to be around $300 per month on the standard repayment program. It ends up being a little bit higher, maybe, you know, $330 or $340. So, you know, as a rule of thumb, I think for every $10,000 that you borrow, the payment's going to be about $100. For parents who borrow $200,000 for their child to go to school, their payment's going to be over $2,000 a month. And for many people, that's more than their mortgage payment.
And that's over a 10-year period, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And it's important to point out, Nanette had brought up earlier, there are programs for students doing repayment. They can change the repayment structure if need be, based on their income. They can enter programs like the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. If you work for a qualified employer, you'll get potential forgiveness on some of the debt in the future. There are ways to defer payments if the student goes on to grad school. A lot of kids go into grad school nowadays. So those subsidized and unsubsidized loans for the students have some really good programs that people should be aware of if they need to get in that situation.
One other comment I want to make too, Angie, is that Parent PLUS loans begin repayment pretty much immediately. For students, they can defer, the payments on the principal for federal student loans are deferred automatically until they graduate. But for parents, when they start borrowing under the PLUS loan program, they have to start repayment very quickly.
Okay.
And Angie, you mentioned the rule of thumb. So that's exactly right for what Annette said. But I think when you're talking to your student, and this can be something that, if you're working with a financial planner, it's a good way to involve the student. They're not, when they're, 17 and thinking about going to college, they likely do not have a lot of concept of what, borrowing $30,000 and owing $300 a month for 10 years really looks like. And, we as parents, we're all parents, and we have that experience now in our budgets, and we know, I could shift this around, or I can handle that much, that kind of thing. But, keep in mind, they have probably not had to deal with things other than just the little incidentals they might have had to pay for, or maybe car insurance on their car or pay for a car or something like that. But they, this is a good opportunity for you as a parent, maybe even working with a planner, to start your child on the right path by playing that game of, how are you going to pay for this? If you come out of school with $50,000 of debt, that's not unusual. We heard the statistics at the beginning that Angie mentioned. Think through with them, $500 a month, where's that going to come from after school? Because things sound great right now, and college is super important. We are all advocates for kids going to college, but they just don't have any sense of what that payment looks like. And like Nanette said, they are on the hook for that. There's almost nothing short of death that they can
right.
do to get out of
okay,
it.
Okay, so it's. So I have some myths here I just wanted to toss out and see what you have to say about them. Let me see. One myth is that federal student loan consolidation is going to save you money on interest. Is that true?
No. So consolidation is a process that you can go through once you've graduated, basically put all your loans into one loan, a direct unsubsidized loan and a direct subsidized loan. So it's really two loans if you have both kinds of direct student loans. It's one loan, and how they calculate the interest rate is they do a weighted average of the interest rates that you are already paying on your student loan. So at the end of the day, the interest rate is the same. You're being charged the effective same amount of interest.
Great. Okay. So what would a refi do in that case then?
Right. So a refinance is when you typically go outside to a private lender, and you can receive one loan at that point. The refinance, they will pull your credit, they will look at your payment history, and they will determine an interest rate based on your credit profile. It's more of sort of a market-based interest, calculation. And you can do either a fixed interest rate or a variable interest rate. Some refinancing companies allow you to do a portion of time where it's fixed, and then it goes to variable. So there's really a lot more complexity in looking at a refinancing and whether it might be a good idea.
Okay.
And I always be careful with that, because that's an excellent option for certain families. And then if you are a family that wants to take advantage of some of those federal programs for like income-based repayment, you'll lose that if you do a refinancing rather than a consolidation. Because it just becomes a private loan then, and the private lenders, the banks don't.
How about this myth that you should borrow the full loan amount offered?
Oh, I'll take that one. do your 4-year plan for how much you need, or 5-year plan, or whatever you think you're gonna need. But don't just take it because it seems like free money. It's any kind of borrowing is expensive when you are 22, 23 years old and you're just starting out your life. And, you know, you either have to live at home or you have to drive a junker around or you have to give up on grad school dreams or something else because you can't afford things. So like loans are a really important part of college financing and having the right plan, but don't just take whatever's offered. You should really put some thought into what other alternatives are there. Like, could we do some cash flow through parents? Are there grandparents that could help out? Do we have ways that we can work during part of school or at least during the summer to pay off some of it? Like any of that money helps out. So yeah, don't take the max just because it's offered.
Right. And we haven't really talked about alternatives to student loans, but that's exactly right, is that there are, you know, instead of defaulting to taking a student loan, maybe having a hard discussion with your student as early as possible, when possible, to talk about, you know, summer employment or perhaps even things like community college or college in the high school, getting credits while you're in high school, scholarships, private and both those that are offered at the university level. You know, these are all alternatives to borrowing student loans. And again, kind of go into the planning process with regard to figuring out how you're going to pay for all 4 years. I feel like it's just kind of an easy default to go toward that federal student loan piece immediately without kind of requiring maybe a little bit more of the student or the family. I'm on a Facebook group too, where there's a lot of people that share exactly how they paid for their student, their full 4 years. And a lot of it has to do with self-sacrifice. You know, the family as a whole kind of buckled down together and made decisions that were in the financial interests of the whole family so that they avoided taking on too much student loan debt. Okay. One last myth. Let's see. What's a good one? That you'll earn enough after college to handle your student loans.
Oh, this is a great myth. Well, despite the the obvious way that might not be true is if you can't get a job when you graduate. A lot of kids, it takes them a little while to find a job, especially one in their chosen field. And so they work at Starbucks in the meantime, or they do something that isn't going to be paying them sort of a living salary. So I think that's, you know, the first issue that you come across. The rule of thumb I like to use is don't borrow more than your first year salary. So for example, folks that are going to be graduating with a technical degree, computer science, engineering, they can afford to borrow more because their salaries are going to be up to twice as much as say a teacher or, you know, some other lower paid professions. So I help people think through what does that after college working life look like? How long will it take you to get a job? What's the cost of living where you're thinking about living? And, you know, don't borrow more than your first year salary in total.
Okay. Quinn, anything else you want to add?
No, Nanette, as usual, covers it extremely well. I wouldn't add anything to that. I think just keep in mind that, you know, the college game has changed from when many of us were in college, and I was in college in the mid-90s, and it was, you know, largely kind of worked on the same principles, but the price tags were so much lower. A lot of grandparents and even just some parents that are a little older and it's been a little while that they've been out, they don't realize just how expensive state schools have gotten, especially private schools have gotten, and that this is not necessarily something that can be handled in the same way that you handled it 20 or 25 or 30 years ago. So it will be beneficial to you to get up to speed, maybe find help if you so choose, but there is some work to reacquaint yourself if this is your first time going around with your own child on this ride. So give it some work.
Okay.
One thing I did want to mention before we go is that a lot of parents think that if they borrow to send their first child to school, that they're going to get more financial aid going down you know, the path if they have subsequent children that are going to be attending. The financial aid process doesn't look at the debt that you have. It doesn't look at your expenses. They don't care that you're all of a sudden, you know, $50,000 in debt from sending your first child through school. You're not going to get extra financial aid just because you've borrowed for the first one.
Okay, that's a really good point. Well, and I think that's a good place to wrap up our conversation today. I'd like to thank Quinn Arnold of Arnold Financial Planning, and he can be found at arnoldfinancialplanning.com, as well as Nanette Kamian of Inspiration Financial Planning at inspirationplanning.com. And we want to thank you for listening to us and joining us today as well. We encourage you to continue the college funding conversation by joining our Facebook group called Ask the Experts About Paying for College, and watch for the next episode of our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.
Thanks, Angie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Angie.
Thank you.